I guess my bookcase experience this week kind of gave me a new appreciation for the cave that came crashing down around the Croods. We're going to continue our journey. And again, I just want to remind you, I know this is a bit on the unorthodox side, but that is exactly what I wanted to happen. Just take a little different perspective on how we usually view our lives. The Croods that we've been following along, they are cave people. Can you be a cave people without a cave, though? Is it possible? See, they lived their lives by these really, really simple rules, and all of those rules were epitomized by the red handprints that they had put onto the wall, the things that you're supposed to avoid. Isn't it interesting that as their cave came crashing down around them, all of the rules got broken, literally, as the walls just came apart. But these rules had kept them safe and alive and allowed them to survive for many, many, many years. But obviously, this family is going to have to make some adaptations if it's going to survive, because as they stood on that little ridge, their world had changed. And the good news is last week we met this other guy, literally guy, and his little pet belt. And he's going to become important to them because he's kind of already used to living in this world. And in the world, the crude theology, the idea, the rules that they had lived by isn't going to help them very much. So they're going to have to learn how to trust Guy a little bit as they head into this adventure. And what they're going to have to do is, well, they're going to have some evolving faith, and they're going to have to deal with the new. Now, you have to understand, under their crude theology, under the way they had always lived their life, new is bad. I mean, Eep came back and she said, "I found something new." And what was their reaction? Man, they pushed her in the middle of the family kill circle. I love that terminology. And they surrounded her and they were ready to defend because they thought new is bad. And then when she pulled out that particular shell, and she's like, "I'm going to call him. I'm going to prove to you it's not bad." And she blew the shell. Don't you love their response? Man, they smacked that shell out of her hand, and they started beating it, and they crushed that shell into a million little pieces, because guess what? New is bad, and I guess maybe that's a reasonable response. I mean, we chuckled at the clip. Maybe it was one of those uncomfortable smiles, because you know what? Really, that's kind of how we deal with new, especially when it comes into the church. I mean, something new comes in and it's different and it looks a little different and it sounds a little different and maybe it even smells a little different. They're always sniffing things. I don't get that. But it smells a little different, and you know what? Our first inclination: form the family kill circle, protect the body against that which is new that has come in, make sure that it's all okay, and that's kind of how we do it. The only problem is that the world is changing. Just like the Croods' world is changing, our world is also changing, and that means there are different people that have different ways of doing things and different lifestyles and different ways that they were brought up. And now if we're going to reach out into the world, those are the people that we're going to be bringing in. And new is not going to become bad. New is going to become, you're going to hate this, the norm. And the question becomes, how are we, the church, supposed to deal with new? I mean, after all, we've been here a long time. This particular church has been here since 1941. That's a long time to be here. So as our new theology comes in, and when I say theology, I'm not talking about changing the message. We'll talk about that a little bit here. But as our new methodology comes in, how do we deal with new? The good news is I don't have to guess. You know why? Because there is a lesson from Jesus that is all about how do I deal with new. So this is a little different than the two sermons that we've already done in this series. We bounced all around Scripture, putting the other two back together. Not this time. I want you to go ahead, if you have your copy of God's Word, if not, there's one in the pew rack in front of you, go ahead and turn to Luke chapter 5. We're going to be there for the entire sermon, and I'm going to read the whole story, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to break down this lesson from Jesus about new as we look at how we are supposed to deal with new. So this is what Luke chapter 5, verses 33 through 39 says. They, now, they are the people that are not, these are the Pharisees, and these are the Sadducees, and these are other people. They said to him is Jesus, so they're now talking to Jesus, John's disciples often fast and pray, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees, but you go on eating and drinking. Jesus answered, can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from him, and in those days they will fast. He told them this parable. No one tears out a piece of new garment to patch an old one. Otherwise, they will have torn the new garment, and the patch will, they will have torn the new garment, and the patch from which the new will not patch the old. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins, and all the wine will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. No, new wine must be poured into new wineskins. And no one, after drinking old wine, wants the new, for they say the old is better. So this is one of those stories. I've heard a lot of ways of people adapting it, and I'm just going to take the very practical way of looking at this. I want to begin with, well, what's the issue? What is it that has caused Jesus to tell this story? What is it that has been brought up this issue? What is it that is the central thing? What is Jesus trying to answer? And well, the issue starts with, well, both the disciples of John, so these aren't just the old people, these are the people that are following the new ways too. You know, the man that was out there eating locust and dressed in camel hair and wild honey and, you know, baptizing people and preaching repent. He had a following, okay? And they were called John's disciples, and eventually they would be transferred over and become followers of Christ. But you also had the Pharisees and all of the old tradition from the religion of the Judaism, and they were all observing a tradition. Now, the tradition in this case was fasting and praying. But this is not a lesson on praying and fasting. Because you have to know that this was not something where they had a need that they had specifically set out, we're going to fast and pray until God answers this question, or we're going to seek God in this way. This was a ritual fast and prayer. This is one of those things that they adapted from the book of Leviticus, where God gave them some commands about how to fast and pray. And the Pharisees had taken that next step and said, well, we're going to make sure you fast and pray, and we're going to give you a tradition or a ritual or a time that you're supposed to fast and pray. And if you don't do it, then you know what? You're not following the rules. So we're not talking about the actions. We're talking about the fact, well, Jesus' disciples were not observing the tradition. And as the Pharisees and even John's disciples were looking at Jesus' new disciples and the new following, he was like, wait a minute. How come all these rules that are painted on this cave wall, all these red handprints, how come they don't apply to your disciples? How come you guys aren't observing the same things we're observing? What is it that makes you think that you're special? Well, Jesus gave them a great answer. And I want to examine that answer. As a matter of fact, he broke this answer up into four pieces. So I want to look at the four pieces of this answer and put it back together so that we can answer the question, how is the church supposed to deal with something that new that comes into the church? And well, the first answer is found right there in verses 34 and 35. Can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. In those days they will fast. So the first answer Jesus gave them is, now is not the time to observe the tradition. The situation is changing because you were observing those traditions, preparing yourself on how to live in a relationship with God. And you understand the bridegroom is now here. You see, he had logic. The situation had changed. Therefore, maybe the traditions needed to be changed just a little bit. Now, I do find it interesting, and I want to make sure you take note of this. He did not dismiss the tradition. He did not look at the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the people that had brought this question to him and said, you know what? You guys need to get out of your old ways and put all that stuff to the side. You just need to stop. He didn't do that. What did he say? He just said, hey, look, something new is happening. Something different is changing. The world around you is changing. Something is going to be different. And you know what? Sometimes we're going to just have to change with it. I guarantee you, the morning that the Croods woke up, well, with the exception of Ypres, they had no interest in going on a journey. They were perfectly satisfied with their cave life, even though it was harsh and even though it was kind of desolate and a little bit on the dark side. They were perfectly happy. But now that the tradition has changed and they're seeing this whole new colorful world, they do understand something different is going to have to be done because all of the old ways of doing things isn't necessarily going to adapt. So Jesus gave them this idea, and then you're going to get the idea that he's going to start talking about the old and the new mixing together. That's hard, isn't it? I mean, mixing the old and the new is difficult. I mean, let's be honest. We would much rather prefer just to have the old, but somehow I have to fix the old and new. You know, I remember when I was a teenager, they introduced New Coke. Y'all remember New Coke? Look, somebody made a face. Oh, New Coke. And they made a very drastic marketing decision. I don't know if you guys even remember the commercials when they made New Coke. What they did is they put the New Coke on the shelves, and they totally pulled the old Coke off the shelves. You couldn't even find the old stuff. And you know what Coca-Cola Bottling Company realized? That was a disaster. Because guess what? Nobody really liked the new Coke. Nobody really wanted to give it a chance. And all they wanted was their old little hourglass-shaped bottle, and they wanted it all like it was. And finally, after profits started to dip, they decided, you know what? We're going to bring back what we now call Coca-Cola Classic. And you know new Coke is still out there. They've just changed the packaging on a little bit. But they had to figure out not how to separate the old and new, but how we can have both of them working together. And it's a difficult process, because you have to take the right approach. And I want to tell you something. As somebody that has been in churches all of my life and have been through two churches that have went through massive changes in the way that they had to do church to survive in their world, I want to tell you something. Oftentimes, we take the very wrong approach. We don't look at this story that Jesus gave us, and we don't apply it to what we're doing, and so we make a great big mess, and usually we cause fractures in the church. Where we had just listened to the story, I think we would get some ideas on how we're supposed to take this transition to bring new into the church and not have everybody be so upset about what's happening. And I find it interesting that Jesus taught this lesson, because I think he intended for us to understand it. So the first thing that you need to understand is the new cannot just be a patch. This is verse 36 from that scripture. No one, now I like this idea, nobody, well, no reasonable person, okay? No one tears a piece out of a new garment to patch the old one. Otherwise, they will have torn the new garment and patch from the new, and the patch from the new will not match the old. So this is what the idea is. Say you have a pair of jeans, and I do realize we don't patch jeans anymore because holes in jeans are kind of in vogue. But in my day, we patch jeans. And so when you got a hole in the knee of the jeans, you know what you would not do? You would not go to Walmart. Well, Walmart wasn't around back then, so we'll call it Kmart. So you would not go to Kmart, and you would not buy a brand new pair of denim jeans and bring them home and cut the knee out of the new jeans to make a patch for the old ones and then sew it on. You know why? Because you will not have two ruined pair of jeans. Because you cut the old one, you cut the new one, and then you've taken that cloth from the new one and you sewed it onto the old one. And what's going to happen the very first time you put them jeans in the washing machine and then into the dryer? Well, the old fabric that you sewed into that hole, it hasn't been shrunk yet. And so it's going to draw up, and what you're going to have is the thread is going to start to pull, and it's going to bunch, and then you know what's going to eventually happen? That patch is going to rip away from the place where you sewed it in. So then you end up with two pair of jeans that have holes in it. So this idea that we take a patch and we just take something that's new, we cut something new out of something new, and we just try to stick it over something old and say, you know what? That will solve our problem. And it doesn't, does it? Haven't we seen this happening all across our churches in America, where we tried to just take something new and cut a piece of it out and patch it right over top of something old, and then we just want to slap the new and improved label on it and say, there you go, we've got the problem fixed. problem is as it goes through its life and it goes through its cycles and the new begins to adapt to where it has been sown in, there's a pulling and a pulling and a pulling. And eventually, I remember when you get this with the kid, when you get this when you were a kid, when your mom sewed a patch or put an iron or a patch on your jeans and you washed it enough, you'd end up with this little bubbly knot right where your jeans are. And then you didn't want to wear the jeans anymore because you were afraid everybody was going to pick on you because you had that little mark on your jeans. And it never worked. And Jesus uses this analogy on how we're supposed to deal into the church, because the idea that I can just take something new and stick it into something old and make it all work, it's not going to work because it's just going to tear away. That doesn't solve the problem. I'm just patching an issue to think I've got it fixed. Now, he goes on and he gives another analogy. And this is one I actually had to do a little research on. Neither can you just cram the new into the old. Oh, and don't tell me we have tried this in the churches over and over again. Let's read what Jesus has to say. And no one, now I do like this again, he says no one, nobody in their right mind would do this action. No one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins and the wine will run out and the wineskins will be ruined. No, new wine must be poured into new wineskins. Now again, I had to do a little research because I don't drink wine. I don't, because I just don't like the taste of it, never have. It's just not my thing. And not only do I not drink it, I will definitely tell you I've never made it. Now, I do have some relatives that have made some other kind of things up on the mountains in Nelson County, but wine is not what you would call that. But I have never made wine, so I had to go do a little bit of research. And in that research, you know what I find out? New wine has to breathe. Because it begins to ferment. They squish those grapes. You ever seen the Lucy episode where she's dancing in the grape vat? And they squish those grapes, and they put it all into these things, and they seal them up, and they have to wait for the wine to age. But as it ferments, the wine begins to put off a gas. That's the reason in modern day when you pull the cork, it goes, it makes that nice pop sound. Okay, that's where they put the air in, and it's been compressed and it's put in there. That's also the reason that when they open up wine, they have to listen. They say that you have to let the wine breathe because you want all of the fermented gas to get out of the bottle before you actually try to drink the liquid. So now maybe you've learned something about wine today. Let's see if we can learn something about something new here. So you have to understand this idea new wine has to breathe, and it puts off gas as it begins to ferment. And so what they used to do in biblical times is they would put them in what they call wineskins, which is basically this leather pouch that's made out of animal hide. And so as they put them in this leather pouch that's made out of animal hide, you do understand that when you make brand new animal skins, it's kind of loose. You know, it's got stretchy when you go in, you get the new ball glove or you get the new leather shoes, and they're moldable at that point. But as the time goes on and you put wine into the skins and you've used them and then you drank that wine and you put more wine into the skins and the skins begin to soak up the wine, and eventually what happens to a ball glove when it's really, really old? It becomes stiff. I've got a ball glove that I used for years and years and years, and then I put it in the garage because I stopped playing ball because of ankles and back. And then when we were cleaning out the garage, I found it and you pulled it and it went crack because it began to get stiff. And so there's a lesson here that Jesus is trying to teach them about, not about the question they were asking about how to make new things work, because you cannot just take something brand new, like brand new wine, and put it into those old skins, because those skins have become rigid and they become rough and they become unflexible. And so then when I cram the new wine in and it begins to breathe and it begins to put off the gas and it forces that skin to expand, it's like blowing air into a balloon, and you eventually put too much air into the balloon, and what happens to it? It pops. And then guess what? You destroy the skin and you lose the wine in the same boat. So you destroy both by simply trying to take something new and forcing it into something that will say, you will take this in or else. And eventually what happens? It all comes apart in the end. So that's the two lessons. Those are the other two lessons that he gives along with that first answer. And then he goes on and he adds one more statement to it that I want you to pull in. And here's what it says. People prefer what they know. This is what he says. And no one, and again, I love this. This is the third time he's used this. No one would do the patch. No one would cram the old into the new, and I mean the new into the old, and nobody in their right mind, after drinking old wine, wants the new, for they say the old is better. You see, Jesus is not really saying the old is better. What he's saying is that people don't like new. So anytime I bring something new in, I don't care what it is, you know what? People don't like it. After all, we like old. Have you ever gone to the store and you've had a product that you've been buying your entire life, and you walk in and it's there and it looks like almost the same product, but it's got this little label on it? New and improved. What's the first thing you want to ask yourself? What did you do to my product? I mean, I was very happy with the way it was before, and how in the world did you improve my product? And sometimes you can get somewhere, you read the ingredients to see how it matches the old bottle and the new, but you ever, okay, I'm the only person in the world that does that, okay. But you read the ingredients. You want to know what changed, because I liked my old. I liked the way it worked. I was perfectly happy with it. You know, there is this idea here that, well, left alone, we will always stick with the old instead of trying the new. That's just the way it works. I mean, left on my own, I always do the same thing. I'll show up at the same time. I'll do the same routine. We are creatures of habit, and we don't like new. But here comes the problem. The world is changing, and our mission is to reach the world. Therefore, we have to learn how to deal with the new. Now, I want to give you a couple important notes. Both the old wine and new wine were both made from grapes. Both the old and new skins were both made from animal hide. Both the patch and the garment were both made from cloth. Now, why is that important? Because Jesus is not changing the essence. He's not changing the message. He is purely talking about the methodology and how you do things. He did not tell them, stop praying and fasting. That's an old way of doing things. Absolutely not. As a matter of fact, that tradition carried well into the church and is still practiced today. We still pray and we still fast. So he's not getting rid of it. He is simply saying you're going to have to find a new way to apply the lesson. You see, this story's old is the traditions, and the new is change. He's not talking about fasting and praying. He's talking about dealing with the new. There is an important distinction, because it is not about calendar years. I want to tell you a funny story. Dean, I'm going to rat on you a little bit here. We were sitting here, and when Lauren came to do her audition, I guess is what we'll call it, and we picked a song out of the hymnal, and she played Because He Lives, and Dean said, there's nothing like the old, old hymns, and that hymn was written in 1971. There's nothing like, but it was written in 1971, which is actually about the same time that many of the songs that we sing, like Come Now Is the Time to Worship, and some of those came in at the same time. But understand, it's not about calendar years. A lot of times we think that old is about calendar years and new is about, well, it's young. No, it's about the idea of tradition versus change. Old and new will always struggle to coexist. This sermon is not going to make it any easier. Okay, when you take something old and you mix it with something new, there's always going to be this clashing and this thing where there's a transition, and sometimes it's going to be a little awkward. I call it the kitten phase. If you ever watch the kitten, their legs start to grow before their body starts to grow, and so they begin to run, and they're very awkward because they're trying to jump and bounce, and they just don't go right because their body has to catch up with their legs. That's old and new mixing together. They're going to always struggle to coexist. Most change comes out of necessity, not desire. I have a meal that I like to eat at Cracker Barrel. It's meatloaf, macaroni and cheese, hash brown casserole, and baby carrots. So we went to Cracker Barrel one night, and I was there, and I ordered my meal, and Caleb even jokes as he can do it in the same order that I'm going to order, almost in the same voice that I order it in. And it's because he knows I don't even need a menu. I'm going to order that. And I ordered it, and I'm sitting there, and I'm waiting for my meal, and they came back out, and they said, sir, I'm sorry, we're out of meatloaf. I got to tell you something. I've never eaten anything else off the Cracker Barrel menu except for breakfast. And you know what? I ordered something else, and they brought it, and it was good. But you know what I grumbled about the whole time, right? That they were out of meatloaf. As a matter of fact, it took a while before we went back to Cracker Barrel, because I'm like, I want to call them first to make sure what? They're going to have meatloaf. because that's my meal. That's what I'm going to do. But I was forced to make a change because guess what? It became necessary. And so we need to realize that sometimes in our life, God asks us to make a change because it's necessary, not because I want to. Doing something just because it's tradition is not a valid reason. If the Pharisees were just praying and fasting just because they thought it was the tradition, Jesus would have gotten on them about that, because the idea is doing something just because it's always the way we've done it, that's not a good reason to do it. You see, you got to examine the environment around you and figure out how you're going to adapt to it. The response to changing the situation will always require us to change. We get this in every other part of our life. Something changes, and we have to change. And we have to figure this out in the church also. Now, that's all well and good, and that sounds really good. But here's what we need to realize, and this is the crude theology the church has to get around. Forcing something new onto something old will not work. Been there, done that. We have tried it over and over again. You can't force a change. Going over to the Christian bookstore next time you're in, either you're down in Richmond or Roanoke or wherever you go, and they have a Christian bookstore, go out to lifeway.com or even Amazon and go out there and look and just type in church change. There are thousands of books that have been written on this about how to do change in the church, and we still struggle with it because you just can't force it. It's either going to rip apart like the patch on the jeans, or it's going to burst open like the wine and the skins. So that's what you can't do. But here's the evolving faith point that we do have to learn how to do. There is a time to change. Sometimes new is needed. And when that time comes, here's the point. The old must embrace it and even at times help it. That's hard, isn't it? There is a time when you have to evaluate the situation you're in. You have to look around and say, oh, the bridegroom is here. It's not time to fast and pray. It's time to party and celebrate. That was Jesus' answer. And not only are you not supposed to try to crush the shell or form the family kill circle, you are to evaluate it to make sure it's not a sheep in wolf's clothing. You do want to make sure, I want to make sure I said that right, because if you put it backwards, that would be totally bad. So you want to make sure you do that, but you also have to understand that sometimes you just have to say, you know what? I understand the situation is changing. While I may not like the situation, we have to figure out how to reach these people. And that might mean that I have to back off of some of my old and even try to embrace and push some of the new. And this is something that's harder in a church. But understand, this is exactly what Jesus was saying. We need to have our eyes, like the crude now have, on that open space that, you know what, this is where we're going to have to learn how to survive. Now, there's another place that we need to remember, because this isn't all just about the old giving away to the new. There's a new side of it too. There is a place for traditions because they provide stability, and the new should not try to destroy it. See the two working together now? You see, just because it's something we've always done, we can't take the attitude out with the old and in with the new. What's the old saying? You can't throw the baby away with the bathwater. You have to have some kind of a transition there. You have to understand that just because we want to try something new and we want to go a different direction, we can't just ignore the past and say, none of that is even valid, because you know what? Even though they were in a new environment, you know what? The crudes, they still had to breathe. That didn't change. That's a tradition, right? Without it, that wouldn't work. They still had to eat. They still had to walk. They still had to run. They still had to know how to climb. All those things that were the traditions of their own, they still needed those in their new environment. All that was going to happen was they're going to have to add some new skills to the old, so they couldn't throw the old away. So we have to get to this happy medium where we're bringing in the new, and the old is helping, the traditions are helping the new become more substantiated. And at the same time, the new is complementing the traditions, and so it begins to work together. And that all sounds really good, but it's complicated. It's hard. You see, we must stop putting one against the other and allow one to build off of the other. That's what Jesus is trying to get to here. You need to stop trying to just stick the patch over it and call it new, because that's going to rip it apart. You need to stop pushing the wine into it just to say we will force it to change, because that's just going to make it bust. You have to develop a plan where one builds off of the other so that the new and the old can coexist at the same time. And you know what's going to eventually happen? The new will become old. And then at some point, we'll be having the same argument in a few years. It's just the faces will change. The people that are new now will be old, and the new people coming in will have new ways of doing it. And it's just, you know what? The church has always worked this way. It's always worked that way. It's always been an adapting, changing, breathing creature. But here's the point. How do you make it all work? It all begins with a change of heart. You see, if all I'm going to do, and this is where Jesus' lesson really should take hold, if all I'm going to do is try to change it cosmetically, I'm just going to put a patch on it, or I'm just going to force some new wine in it so it'll have a new flavor to it. If I'm going to do that, then understand that is not how Jesus is saying do this. He said, you know what? You got to change your heart. See, because if my heart changes and I'm really interested in reaching the people that are outside this world, if I'm really interested in going on this mission, if I'm really interested in doing what the church was designed to do, then you know what? My heart says I have got to find a way to reach these people, whatever it takes. And now I begin to think, you know what? I want to teach them some of the traditions, because some of those traditions are very, very valuable to how you live the Christian life. But I also understand I'm going to have to learn how to teach my traditions in a new way where they can understand it. And that's hard. I realize that. This is difficult. Nobody said it was going to be easy. If it was easy, Jesus would have been able to give a much simpler lesson. He could have just said, get over it. But that isn't what he said. He gave this whole lesson because he wants us to understand. He knew there were going to be new things. He knew there were going to be old things. He knew how much they were going to struggle to coexist. But at the core of it is, where is your heart? If your heart is simply set on staying put and not allowing anything to change, then you're going to be like the skins in the garment. And everything that comes in new is going to either pull you apart or rip you apart. But if your heart sets on what Jesus' heart was set on, and that's people, then you're just going to look at the new and you're going to decide, okay, it's not dangerous. I don't know that I like it, but it's not dangerous. And so we need to find a way to incorporate that new into the old so that it will work together. One will build off of the other. And then you get this constantly flowing mechanism where it just keeps going and we just keep reaching people. Man, wouldn't that be great? That's our lesson for today. And so I want to ask you today, where is your heart? Is your heart just stuck on what's old and what's new? Or is your heart stuck on people? They're in a desperate need for a relationship with Christ. And you know what? Are you willing to do whatever it takes to reach them? I realize that's not hard. That's not an easy concept.